This is Mick from National Rock Review. I have Brian Thomas from Halloween, the heavy metal horror show based out of Detroit, Michigan, here with me on the phone tonight. How's it going, Brian?
Good, man. How you doing?
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking time to speak tonight.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure.
So you guys just celebrated a 30-year anniversary of the Halloween heavy metal horror show with a huge concert at the Diesel Concert Lounge here in Chesterfield Township, Michigan. How was that feeling for you guys playing that night in front of all your peers and friends growing up here in Detroit?
It was a lot of fun. It's crazy to think back that it's 30 years. But, we had a good time. Big show, had a nice turnout. It was fun to, bring in songs from the whole span of the band's career. Donnie Allen, our former guitar player, came up and sat in with us. And we had a couple of drummers filling the drum throne. Our drummer Rob is down with an illness right now, so we had Foot, who plays with me in my side project Ass. He sat in for half of the show, and Chris Buchek, who is the drummer for HMR, he was in Overloaded for a little bit. He plays with the Honkies, and he toured with Halloween in 2009. He went to Europe with us to play the Sword Brothers Festival in Germany. And so we brought him back, and he played the first half of the show. So it was cool to have, guys sit in. Brian Fields from Band From Earth, Band From Hell, and Chain sat in on a couple songs on the bass. And we just had a good time.
Now, I've never seen your show personally before. I've heard many things about the legend of Halloween. You got to tell me about the stage set and how it came to be.
Well, in the beginning, I'm from New Jersey originally, so I'm heavily influenced by the East Coast bands. When I was coming up, there were bands that were playing the bar scene, a band in particular called Salty Dog that I became friends with. I had a television show, and I interviewed bands, and my thing was to go out and videotape local bands, and this band, Salty Dog, was a big influence on me. They were a cover band, but at a point in the show, a couple of the guys in the band would wear masks, and, they would just kind of yuck it up. So I really liked that because it seemed like the crowd came alive when the keyboard player put on this old man mask, and they would play Aqualung by Jethro Tull. And everybody loved the visual. And then there was a band called Phantoms Opera, and they were kind of just a dark, brooding band that played, early heavy metal. And Twisted Sister was starting to come up. There was a band out there called Rat Race Choir. And then, of course, I was, close proximity to New York City, so I was going to Broadway shows like Jesus Christ Superstar and Godspell and Phantom of the Opera. So I loved the whole theatrical thing. I was in drama club in high school and junior high, and I just dug the visual aspect of it. And so when I started to get into the music scene, I kind of brought all that with me. And then, I sort of gravitated towards bands like David Bowie, Genesis, Alice Cooper, Kiss. Bands that were doing a visual thing, and that just kind of became part of my persona when it came to being a singer. I liked doing more than just getting up there and singing. So when we put this band together, I had been playing in a local band called Alcatraz, not the same one with Yngwie Malmsteen and Graham Bonnet, but this was a local band here in Detroit, and I wore makeup in that band, and we did pyro and everything. And Rick Craig, the original guitar player for Halloween, had seen me with his brother Mark Scott. They were both from Baltimore, and me being from New Jersey, we kind of ended up, finding a camaraderie because we were not from the area. So we kind of found each other and put this band together. And it was Halloween time. It was the middle of October when we started talking about it. When we started getting together, it was the last week of October. And I had my basement decorated with skulls and spider webs and, ghosts and whatnot. And those were all over top of probably 1,000 pictures of naked girls from Playboy and Penthouse and Hustler and whatnot. And then the cobwebs and candelabras and everything were in front because I was decorated for Halloween. And Rick said, "Hey, why don't we just call the band Halloween?" And he was half joking, but you know, I thought, "Hey, that could be kind of cool." And we had all this, you know, Halloween decorations up. And at the time, Chuck Burns, who was friends with Mickey St. Clair, who was the drummer for Seduce back then, he was our drummer. Chuck was, and he knew that Seduce was writing a song called Halloween, so he didn't want to call the band Halloween. He thought that they would think that, you know, he brought that idea to us and we were stealing their idea. So because of all the naked chicks on the walls and the fact that we dressed up with our hair ratted up and our stage clothes on and lots of jewelry and makeup and whatnot, anytime we would go out someplace, grocery store, theater, the mall, whatever, we were always dressed up and guys always mistook us for girls. So when Chuck wouldn't let us name the band Halloween, we ended up calling the band Bitch for the first year. But we already had the stage show, and so when we started playing out, we just took all of that, the Halloween decorations with us, because people that would come to practice saw that, thought it was the stage show, so we just took it with us. And it kind of evolved from there. In fact, the first year that we were called Bitch, we already had the moniker of the Heavy Metal Horror Show, because we had all those, you know, all those pieces with us. And then a year into it, Chuck had been out of the band for a while now, and we became aware of Bitch from L.A., with Betsy Bitch was the singer, and they had put an album out, and we were like, man, we didn't even want to call the band Bitch, and now we're in competition with this band from L.A., so we kind of put our heads together, and we decided that we were going to change the name of the band back to our original choice. Because now that Chuck wasn't in the band, we didn't really care. We didn't, you know, a year had gone by. And so we kind of came up with this plan, because Bitch was actually, you know, getting a following. We were kind of popular for a new band. We were doing a lot of cover tunes and a few originals. In fact, some of the songs that carried over to the Halloween, years came from the Bitch time period. And so we booked this show at the Falcon Lounge at Outer Drive and Van Dyke in Detroit as the final appearance of Bitch. And so we got a lot of people upset, like, oh, man, I can't believe you guys are breaking up. But we weren't really breaking up. We had our drummer, Mark, painted a new Halloween backdrop, and we put it up over top, or behind the Bitch, you know, the Bitch banner. We went on stage at 2:02, and I stopped the show and I said, hey, I want to let everybody know that from this moment on, we're no longer called Bitch. We are now Halloween. We pulled the Bitch backdrop down. The new Halloween backdrop was up, and we became Halloween right there on stage in front of our crowd. And it's been Halloween ever since. So the stage show, the name, all of it kind of evolved from the holiday and the time of year when we got together.
I got to tell you, man, the stage set is just freaking impressive. I mean, how was the evolution? I mean, I'm sure it wasn't always a multi-level, huge crypt all the time. But when did it really start to evolve and take off into the tremendous stage presence that it has now, like you had last weekend?
Well, we actually had the crypt early on, probably like 1984 or 85. You know, we got our hands on some scaffold and put our drum riser up high and built the crypt, and that was so that I could come out of a casket from beneath. And so we've had the crypt almost the entire 30 years, but all the finer detail, we've learned how to make it look more authentic. Back then it looked like the Flintstones, you know, it was just, really badly painted stones on paneling. So, you know, I mean, the drum riser was like that. We've had those pillars and gates for almost 30 years, but again, all of the detail wasn't there back in the old days. It started out as the pillars were black with actual concrete stones on top of them, and the crypt was painted, you know, with these cheesy boulders, basically. Rick used to laugh, and he's like, oh, you know, Flintstones, meet the Flintstones when we do a stage show. So it's been probably over the last 10 to 15 years that we've, you know, had the ability with, you know, places like Home Depot and Lowe's, where you can actually go in and get building materials at a reasonable rate. And we've learned some tricks of the trade, you know, Hollywood techniques of doing our scenery. So that's kind of evolved over the last, you know, half of the band's career. And of course, all of the items like the faces that were on the corner of the crypt and all of the skeletons and all that kind of stuff, every year at this time of year, I'm out at the costume shops and the drugstores and, you know, all the places, the Halloween cities and all that kind of stuff, buying all the clearance items and getting them ready for next year.
Like I said, man, the stage set was impressive. I mean, that's something you would see on, like, a national touring act playing huge arenas. I mean, to see it played, you know, set up in a small club like that, and for $10 a person to get in, you know, I mean, that was a hell of a deal, dude. That was phenomenal.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
All you were missing was some pyro.
We realize that our audience is, you know, struggling to make ends meet just like we are, so, you know, our ticket prices have always been in the $10 range, and I've always just wanted to make sure that people got their money's worth, and so we always try to do some kind of a visual thing. You know, when we're not playing at a theater, we obviously can't do all that. You can't put a drum riser that sits, you know, 8 feet high at the Ritz, because the drummer would be up on the roof, you know. And so you need the support of the fans, and if the venues know that we're going to draw a crowd, then we get to play in the places like Harpo's and Diesel and, you know, Royal Oak Music Theater and the Emerald and the places that have a stage where they can accommodate that kind of a stage show. But, you know, when we play a smaller place, we obviously have to scale it down. But we always try to give a show. There have been a few occasions where we've come in just bare bones with no stage show, and it wasn't to, you know, I want people to understand, we never did it being lazy or feeling like we weren't trying to give the audience, you know, what they deserve. But there have been times through the band's career where, you know, we've been not accused, probably isn't the right word, but, like, there have been people that say, oh, yeah, no, Halloween, all they are is a gimmick. So at certain times in our career, we've gone in and we've just played a show with just our amps and no stage clothes, no makeup, no nothing. We just go in just like any other band, and we play our music because we feel just as strongly about our songs and our material as we do about the image of the band. And so it was always by design. We always went in with a purpose to say, look, our music is good. That we're, you know, we're not just some crappy band that relies on you know, all smoke and mirrors and a big stage show to get people in there. And you know, over the years, our fans have supported our music, and we know that to be true. But sometimes you really have to keep proving yourself to the, you know, to the clubs. You know, because there's always a changeover. You've got the guy that's booking a room now isn't the same guy that was doing it 10 years ago, so he's going to know all the bands that he's dealing with from his generation and whatnot. So a band like us has been around so long, you have to constantly keep proving yourself. And so, you know, I'd say 95% of the time there's some kind of a big stage show, but that 5% we reserve to just say, hey, you know, it is about the music.
Sure. So speaking of your music, you guys first recorded your album, Don't Meddle With Evil. It was released in 1985 on Motor City Metal. How was that received when you guys first released it?
It was received well because we, you know, we had a good following back then. So, you know, our immediate fans here in Detroit, you know, bought copies of it and liked it. And then, I mean, I couldn't even tell you how or why, but it made its way around the world. And, like, still, that album is the one that everybody knows us by. and sometimes they don't even realize that we've put out six other albums since then, and that we're still putting out new music to this day. A lot of people think we put out Don't Meddle with Evil in 1985, and that was the last time anybody heard from us. So a lot of times people are surprised to find out that we're still doing, you know, new music. But the songs on it are great. My issue has always been that we didn't know what we were doing. We went into a studio with like $3,000 and a block of 30 hours to make a record. We didn't have a producer. We were promised a producer. There was a guy that had worked with Kiss that was going to come, and he never showed up. The two engineers that was, you know, were working with us, they were doing gospel groups. They had never done a rock band, much less a heavy metal band. So we got in this room, and we didn't know what to do. We didn't know what was going to come from it. We had already recorded all but one song previous in a demo up in Bay City with you know, somebody else for a lot less money, and it didn't turn out very well. So we went to the disc in East Detroit and tried to make a record, and, you know, it is what it is. It's from, you know, we recorded it in 1984, and the technology was what it was. Like, so we didn't know what we were doing, and we were lucky that a lot of people liked it. I've always wished that we could go back and re-record that with the modern technology and get the balls and the aggression and the true darkness of those songs and bring them more to life. But, you know, you have people that are going to say, oh, don't ruin it. It was great the way it was. And so what I always thought about doing was going back and recording the album over again and using the new recordings as bonus tracks so that the people that liked the original recording, it would still be there. And then the new, updated, more intense, and more modern version of it would be all bonus tracks. But we haven't had the money to do that, so it hasn't happened yet 30 years down the road. Maybe we'll do that because the 30th anniversary of that album is coming up in 2 years. So maybe that's something that, you know, that we might be able to do for the re-release of that record.
Now, you talk about bands think that was the first and only album you ever did, but you released Territory last year in 2012 in February. So a lot of the songs were written back on the studio album Horrifier, and then there's a couple older songs on there. But then you also have the song Where's Michael that was on there, which was supposed to be, it was written for the Rob Zombie Halloween movie.
Right. Yeah, we submitted that. It obviously didn't make the movie. Every time I hear that song, I can picture it playing over the closing credits of that movie. I wrote the song to go with the theme that Rob Zombie, wanted to take that film in, the direction of, you know, Michael Myers as a, you know, as a child, and how he kind of evolved into the grown man and the monster that he became. So the lyrics to the song kind of follow that whole storyline. And, you know, we thought, oh, well, you know, if he hears it, he'll fall in love with it. But, you know, with us being technically an unsigned band, I know how Hollywood works, and they don't want to, you know, a lot of times they don't want to put, an unproven act onto a soundtrack because they want to get as much mileage out of it as they can. And I also, you know, learning the business, I've also learned that a lot of the bands that get a song on a soundtrack, their record labels put up money towards the product, you know, or towards the project. And, you know, we're nobodies. We have no budget, so there's no way that we could contribute $10,000 towards the movie, you know, the Rob Zombie movie. So I understand why it didn't get on there, but fact remains that that's what we wrote that song for, was the Rob Zombie movie.
Excellent. So you guys have done some touring overseas in Europe as well, correct?
Yeah, we go over there every couple of years, and we get treated like Metallica. It's pretty awesome. We play to big crowds, and it still blows my mind to be in front of, you know, a crowd of people that English is a second language to them, and here they are singing words that I wrote in my bedroom when I was 16 in some cases, and they're singing the words back to me, and it's just, you know, what a trip it is that music can, you know, bridge gaps like that and you know, transcend to other parts of the world, and the people, you know, that it means something to these people that, you know, didn't even know you, and just the music touches them and affects them, and it still blows my mind. It's very cool.
What were some of the more memorable acts you played with over the years? What are some of the more memorable acts you played with over the years?
Like nationals?
Nationals, regionals.
Yeah, we toured with Sabotage and Trouble for a short time. We toured with Crimson Glory. We opened for Pantera 4 times here in Detroit, twice at Harpo's and twice at the Ritz. We've played with Frank Marino and Mahogany Rush, which I know a lot of people, like the newer people, you know, younger kids don't know who that is, but he was, you know, he was huge back when we played with him. We've played with Queensryche. We've played with Megadeth. We've played with, so many, Doro Pesh, Nuclear Assault, we played with them a bunch of times. God, there's so many I can't even think of them all right now. Lita Ford. But, you know, the biggest ones were, like I said, Queensryche, Sabotage, Megadeth, Pantera.
It must have been quite an honor opening for Queensryche, being you're a huge Queensryche fan yourself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Also, we played with Yngwie Malmsteen and Michael Schenker and Uli Roth from, you know, the original guitar player for the Scorpions. Yeah, I mean, it's great getting to share the stage with your heroes, people that you know, that influenced and inspired you to even be in the music business. So to be up there playing with them, John Oliva from Sabotage actually produced a demo of ours, and we went in a recording studio in New Jersey with him and spent some quality time, and the album that eventually became No One Gets Out was recorded as a demo with John, and the only reason that it didn't actually become the official album is because John and Chris were getting ready to go in the studio. They were in pre-production for the Streets album that Sabotage put out, and so there just wasn't enough time for John to wrap up our project with, you know, the kind of care that he would want to put on his first official, you know, producing project. And we just ran out of time to do it, so we basically used it as a demo and tried to get signed for the No One Gets Out record, which, you know, we ended up just putting that on our own label. But, yeah, so, you know, we've worked with some really cool people and you know, impressive people, and things work out the way they do. We've always had a problem with signing away our publishing and the rights to our songs. You hear stories all the time. In fact, Dave Mustaine said recently that he has to tour, you know, 365 days a year almost just to make ends meet, because, you know, as a writer and as an artist, you're getting 0.7 cents per song on your work, and the record label and the booking agency and you know, all the other powers that be are getting the other 93%, and so you have to tour and sell merchandise to actually make money. And that's the double-edged sword of being signed to a major label. Yes, you get distribution. Yes, you get to, you know, you get tour support and your name is all over the place, but you're also giving up rights to most of your material. And they can take your stuff and put it on a movie, and they can make, you know, music books with it and ringtones and everything else, and you have to go along with whatever they say. With Halloween, we've always, you know, guarded our, you know, our intellectual property and kept ownership of everything that we've done. And yes, we haven't made it big, but we also still own everything that we've ever done.
Well, speaking of, you know, making it big, I mean, you guys have quite the following here in Detroit, you know, alone, and you have, you know, a national fan base, an international fan base, and the crowd at Diesel Lounge last week, I mean, that place is packed, you know, and just seeing all these people sing along the words of every song, people dressed in makeup. I mean, that's just going to make you feel good that you guys still remain relevant after 30 years.
We've been so lucky over the years to still be doing what we're doing 30 years down the road and have people loyal and support us and show us the kind of love that Detroit has is just, it's indescribable. You know, it's hard to put a price on that, and that's why we do what we do. That's why it was only $10 to get in. That's why I worked my ass off for 2 days to put that stage show up, because I know that those people deserve every bit of 100% that we can put into giving them, you know, the best that we have. And we've been there for them, and they've been there for us, and it's a great marriage. You know, the fans have been so awesome to us. And, you know, not to talk shit about the industry people, but we've always kind of been the Rodney Dangerfield of the music business when it comes to Detroit especially. But I kind of think it's a, you know, an American thing. You know, it's like everybody's got to be better than everybody else. I just made a list just last night. I was thinking about all of the great bands and all the great artists and musicians that, you know, that come from the Detroit area. And I mean, I filled the page up with names of bands. And I think about it, and only two or three of them have gone on to become national, you know, like big national bands. And I think that's sad, because if the people in the industry here in Detroit would invest and would see the talent that's come through the town and try to make more than just the quick dollar, it's like they could have been a part of a scene that would have rivaled L.A. and Seattle and the Tampa area for, you know, for hard rock and metal. I mean, think about it. I'm just going to read a bunch of names. Liars, Cheats, and Thieves, Infect, Idols, Trash Brats, The Meanies, Murder City, Spider, One Way, Toby Red, Scarlet, Weapons, Seduce, Savage Graves, Muggsy, Holy Smoke, Sweet Crystal, Teaser, The Rockets, Cadillac Kids, Bittersweet Alley, Strut, The Beer Whore, Soldiers of Scrape, Nasty, HMR, Siren, Halloween, Bitch, Erebus, Heaven's Wish, Critical Bill, Speedball, David Neil Klein, Trauma, Harm's Way, Motown Rage, In Vain, Collateral Damage, Easy Access, Chaos Theory, Adrenaline, Alcatraz, Almighty Lumberjacks of Death, Ezra, Asylum, Geppetto Files, As You Are, Crud, The Automatic, 60 Second Crush, Horse, Bent Lucy, Blacksmith, Blasphemous, Bloodshot, Bogart, Carbide, Cat's Ass, Cemetery, Chain, Dead in Five, DC Hawks, Madam X, Concrete Rattle, Deathcore, Dead Engine, Bobby East, Miller's Killers, Final Warning, Fracas, Gangway, Guillotine, Gypsy, Heresy, Medieval Metal, Hunky Dory, Eraz, Hellion, Ass, Abuse, Vampirilla, Devious, Feisty Cadavers, Killing Floor, Crucified Nation, Abandoned, Cold as Life, The Necros, Ugly but Proud, Animal, Street Elite, The Void, Generation Zero, Huntress, Broadzilla, Romeo Rock, Benny and the Jets, Agent Fury, Abusement Park, Wizard, Black Onyx, Ragdolls, Tyrant, Loud House, Wish, Wicked Angel, Mariner, Citizen Zero, Harlot, One Man's Trash, Youth Corpse, The Look, Lunacy, Execution, Mirror Child, Mommy's Dearest, Motor City Rockers, Motor City Shakers, Oriental Spas, Paris, Pepperland, Quest, Rapunzel, Rated R, Raw Image, Rhythm Core, Riff Raff, Roulette, Saddle Tramp, Salem Witchcraft, Skeleton Crew, Stone White, Sweet Peas, Threat, Vendetta, Vagrant, Children of the Revolution, Teen Angels, Wolf Hook, ICP, Eminem, Kid Rock. And I'm sure there's a ton that I didn't even get. That's a hell of a list. How many of those bands have gone on to be huge?
That's funny. You mentioned Benny and the Jets. I used to go see that guy and his band play all the time at Riser's Keyboard Lounge down in Westland when I first moved here back in the 90s.
And me too.
That guy's like the patron saint of local Detroit music. Like, hey, have you checked this band out? Have you checked this band out? What kind of music do you like? Well, go here and check this band out Tuesday night. Check this band out Thursday night. Go over here. Go over there. That guy, he's all over the map for music, man.
Yeah, and there's all those great bands, and I feel like this town, the fans are amazing, but like the people that pull the strings in this town, I mean, what a wealth of talent that I just read to you. Half of those bands should have gone on to be national acts, and just nobody ever discovered them because, you know, it's like the clubs don't advertise. There was no advertising for our show on Friday. None. The club didn't put any up. We did. We put stuff on Facebook. I called in to riff on Midnight Metal on Halloween night, and Al Beck Slayer mentioned our show and played one of our songs. Howie from Hard Edge Radio Show had us on his show on Halloween night. We were on the Monday Night Riot Act on George. You know, George does a show with Kevin Beckridge out of Chicago, and he promoted. You know, but other than that, you know, I think to myself, like, if the clubs would really push what's going on and get behind these bands, you know, it's like, we could have had three times as many people in that club if it had been really, really supported and pushed. And I'm really not complaining. I'm observing how much better things could be, you know?
Well, Detroit definitely has a vibrant rock and roll music scene. I mean, every time I've gone out to a club to see a band, I've just been blown away by the raw talent that's on stage in my face. Whether I go to Smalls, Token Lounge, a Harpo's, a Diesel, just every band I see, every local band just kicks the fucking ass, man, around here.
Absolutely. There's a mentality and a drive in musicians that are from here. It's kind of like the working man point of view, you know, that you just got to go out there. You know, nothing's going to be handed to you, and you know that you have to deliver, and you know that the audience is really—they're not going to feed you a line of bullshit. You know, they're gonna be honest with you. If you're giving them what they came for, they're going to give it right back to you. And if you're slacking, they're going to let you know it too. You know, and so you have to be on your game. And there's just a love for what we do, and I see it. That's why. With Halloween and with Ass and with Sirens and Abandon and my acoustic thing, Acoustic Hell, I've been so lucky and so fortunate to work with some of the greatest musicians. You know, it's just incredible. I've been very lucky to run into the people and work with the people that I've worked with.
Awesome. So what's the future hold for Halloween? What's next on deck?
Well, the next thing that's actually, you know, on schedule is we're going back to Germany to play a festival in August of 2014. And in the meantime, TJ and George and myself have been writing. Hello?
Yes.
Okay, I think somebody's beeping in. TJ and George and myself have been writing songs for a new album, and that's going to be something that I'm going to be working towards, is getting that new record recorded.
Very cool. So going back to the Diesel show, you mentioned it took 2 days to set up that show. You know, obviously you had a lot of support staff and everybody help you. Tell me about, you know, the call for volunteers and people, how many people came out and helped you, because it sounds like you got just an amazing outpouring of support.
We probably had about 10 people at any given moment that were actually helping to, you know, to set up, between 5 and 10 people, you know, setting up. And then the characters that came out dressed up during the show, I believe there was another 10 people involved in that. And then, you know, obviously the staff at the club that, you know, ran sound and helped to get everything together on that side. So, you know, there was a good 20 to 25 people besides the band that were involved in making that happen.
Did you guys get a copy of a video for the show to do a possible DVD?
We did. We did videotape the show. A couple of different people were videotaping for us. and we haven't seen any of the footage yet and heard how the sound came out, but we're hoping that we got some really good footage, and that's what we would like to do, is put out a DVD of the 30th anniversary show.
That would be most amazing. Brian Thomas, Halloween, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to the next stage show, man. That's just blew my mind, man. I was impressed. I would pay $40 to go see that show.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking some time to talk to me. Hopefully I didn't ramble too much, and you know, I look forward to the next one. We'll see you around town.
Absolutely, brother. Take care, Brian.
All right, take care. Thanks.